Rendezvous. Good evening, one and all. I know, here we go. Valentine's Day, halfway through February, and it's me, Barry, here with another book and a chat. I am here, and so is my guest. Now, my guest is in England, and I wouldn't normally, well, it's late for him anyway, but it would be perhaps a different issue if it was another date, but I'll get to that in a minute. Anyway, well, here we are. We just got through the Super Bowl here in America. And yes, I do know a bit about American football. We did have it in England from about, I guess, mid-late 70s. It started coming over to England, Channel 4 on a Sunday. And, yeah, we watched it. And it was a good game. The adverts, I think, were less. And as for the halftime show, I knew the singer, obviously, and I knew some of her songs, but she did a medley of 12 songs, and I must admit, I could hardly understand a word she said. And a lot of people have said it wasn't very good. A lot of people have said that the dancers, well, it looked like human biology, those cartoons where they show the sperm cells. That's what they look like to me, anyway. But yeah, it was a good game, though. We got through it and that. My guest, though, what about him? Now, normally on the show, we ask people, did you start writing as soon as you could hold a crayon and this, that and the other? And a lot of people, we haven't say finished work, they retired from newspapers or retired from lawyers or doctors and everything. Well, my guess is just starting off on that, on his life, not on just that. We'll talk about that when we talk to him in a minute. Because on the show today, I have as my guest the one and only Dylan Brennan. Hi, Dylan, how you doing?
Hi, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
My pleasure to have you. And I'm great. Got through another day today. That's what people say, how are you doing? I say, well, I woke up this morning. That's good enough for me these days. But you're in England. This week is week off, isn't it? From
term.
School and that, yeah, half term. Yeah, because, you know, unlike over here where they have like about 3 months off in the summer, you know, in England, we have, you know, an extra 2 weeks for Christmas and then a week in February and then a week and a bit off for Easter. We get 6 weeks off for summer, but not like over here where the kids forget what it's like to go to school. 3 months it is sort of thing. It's ridiculous, but that's the way it goes. But school, you've been, you're coming up, tell everybody, you're 16, but that's about the time for GCEs and GCSEs, isn't it?
Oh, I've already done them. I'm in year 12.
Oh, right, okay. Because that's the other thing, of course. Over here, they say this year and that year. And I say, well, no, that's first year juniors, first year senior school. But now you do that, don't you? You have the start from the first and it goes up to 12, which it wasn't when I was at school. But, you know, that's the sort of thing. So you've done the exams. And I will tell everybody, pretty good, eh? I bet the family was pleased with it. 11 grade nines or something like that.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Was that just because, I know you're sort of very academic and music and stuff like that, but, I mean, you obviously sort of really knuckled down, because it's very important, obviously. You want to go to uni? You got something planned?
Yeah, I'm hoping for Oxford. We'll see how it goes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The dark blue, not the light blue. That's what I like to hear. That's great. Any particular one?
I haven't really looked into the specific colleges yet, but in terms of degrees, I'm either going to go with law or computer science. I'm still trying to decide which one. I know there's a complete opposite, but...
Oh, that, see, we get a lot of retired lawyers turning into authors. My take is that through all their work life they were telling stories anyway, so what's the difference? You know, it's like doctors now write a lot of books because people don't have to read their writing to try and, you know, type it out. but it's good. No, lawyers, I mean, crikey, you come to America as a lawyer, especially if you work for Trump, you're making money all the time, but that's another story. Okay, now you've written a book, a science fantasy type book, but have you always been good at writing stories? I always say, you know, writing stories as soon as you'd hold a crayon. But, yeah, were you always like that?
Yeah, it's something I've always done, even, like, back in primary school. I think year three was, like, the first year where I was, where people were really, like, singling me out as someone who was good at creative writing.
Good.
And Yeah, it's something I've always done. And then in the GCSEs, there's English language, which puts a heavy emphasis on creative writing. So it's something I was just continuously doing. And then 2020 quarantine hit, and I thought it was the perfect opportunity to start a big project, and that turned into Novel Betrayed.
Oh, wow. What? I was just trying to think. You didn't have to do Chaucer, did you, for your English language?
Luckily, no. I know Canterbury Tales. I know it's dreadful. I didn't have to do it.
I always remember the poor... I mean, I was real bad enough. I had The Warden by Anthony Trollope, if I remember right, for my English O-level and stuff. But the year before us, they had Canterbury Tales. And, I mean, you know, it's hard enough to understand English anyway, but understanding Old English? Nah. We asked people, you know, well, what led you to write it? I mean, you've done, obviously, sort of, your writing's been part of what you studied and stuff like that. But it was the pandemic that actually led you down to finally sitting down to write a novel, was it?
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of free time because, online school didn't even start until a couple months into the pandemic.
Right.
And even then, it wasn't taking up anywhere near as much of our day as it was when we were actually in school. The homework was like half of what it was.
Right.
So I had tons of time, and I was always considering writing a book. So I thought it was the best opportunity to start.
Did you? How did it go? I mean, I know you're an avid reader and stuff like that, but you're an avid fantasy reader.
Yeah. During quarantine, that's probably the reason why Novel Betrayed turned out to be a fantasy book. Mm-hmm. I was reading tons. I was reading A Song of Ice and Fire. So those are the books that Game of Thrones is based on.
Right.
I read The Witcher. I read Dune, although that's not fantasy, but nah. It's sci-fi. It's not too far off.
Nah.
I was reading all these types of books. So I knew that when I wanted to actually write a book, I knew that I was going to want to do fantasy because it's something I've always loved.
Yeah, I Piers Anthony and Michael Moorcock, I remember reading a lot of that. Piers Anthony, his is like fantasy with a sense of humour. It's all the words are literally like blades of grass. You could cut yourself. Yeah, they're dangerous, like swords, sort of thing, and stuff like that. Very, very good, like that. So, did you sort of come up with the idea of the story? Or I always say, we say a lot on the show that no matter how much you plan it, the characters lead you down different paths and, minor characters or major roles and stuff like that. How did it go when you started off, setting up to write Novel Betrayed?
Yeah, so it started off with the chapter that is now the prologue chapter. It was the first thing I wrote, like the first draft of it.
Okay.
And it started off pretty goofy because most of the characters in that chapter are named after like teachers and things like that.
Right.
And then I started plotting out sort of the world building. There's like a list of characters that I included at the beginning. Even though it's usually put at the end, I put it at the beginning this time. And I decided I wanted to write in first person because fantasy is a genre where first person isn't done very often.
Yes.
I made like a very brief, not very clear structure of what each point of view chapter was going to be, and then slowly started writing them out one by one, and eventually the story just became completely fleshed out. But it definitely changed direction several times. There was one like character that was it planned to be alive, but is now dead. So
that's so funny because one of the examples I give of this sort of thing is must have been about 8 years ago. This lady, quite a well-known, I wish I could remember her name, historical romance type thing. She had about 20 books out, quite well-known sort of person. And we were talking about this, about characters and stuff like that. And she said that the latest book she's just brought out, she tried to kill this character off 9 times, wouldn't go. wouldn't die. She had to go back and change the whole sort of idea of this character. But you had the other way. You had a character you wanted to go and it died. It just shows you that you have no control. These characters just lead you. It's like people say about writer's block. To me, writer's block is the characters don't want to talk to you because perhaps you didn't listen to them the day before or something like that.
I'm not going to go into the spoilers of the chapter of where that character dies. But they just went into a situation where it was just like, okay, the probability of them surviving this is very, very low.
That's true. A lot of people do that. They get their character and they put their character in a situation and say, right, get out of that. And they do. I mean, you try telling this to people who haven't written books or perhaps don't read somebody, and they don't believe it. They think we're mad. Characters talking to you? It could be a parallel universe. How do we know? I mean, let's face it. But it is. It's like we're the conduit that just produces it for people in this one. The whole idea of it's not just a sort of medieval army, is it? A sword swinging fantasy. You've got love. You've got death. You've got a lot of sort of like realism. And bringing society into it. Is that something that just developed, or was it an intention to sort of make it, I don't know, more real?
Yeah, so again, without spoiling, there are a lot of reasons why it is not completely high fantasy, as in like magic and fantastical creatures and things like that. They do exist, but they're kept at a very low quantity, and there is a reason for that. I think I just generally prefer fantasy stories that keep it on lower stakes.
Right, right.
It goes too overboard with like magic and fantastical creatures and things like that, it takes me out sometimes. It depends on how the story is.
Indeed. I mean, and also it allows you to bring in more realism. I think you've got like marital problems going on one side and stuff like that.
The leading storyline, it revolves around domestic abuse and
really that's good to hear.
So the protagonist's name is Simon Pagen, and he's a noble lord, so hence the name Noble Betrayed. He's quite like reserved compared to the other lords. He just sort of hides away in his castle, which is called Bernstaplin, with his family. However, the king, his name's Eminar, calls him up to be the High Earl, which is sort of second in command of the kingdom, like very influential
position. Right.
He accepts, but it's at a terrible time because his wife Gwenda sees it as the perfect opportunity to get back at him for the domestic abuse in the past. And it just leads to a giant war between the two. At the heart, it's between the two of them, but the king ends up getting involved in the war and everything. And everything goes crazy. People die. The council discover a plot to assassinate the king, which they believe is being orchestrated by Gwendis's brother. Everything just gets worse and worse.
Do you actually go into the abuse part at all? Because some people just gloss over that, and it's great if you do, because obviously on a show like this we do get people write about abuse, write about religious abuse, family abuse, everything like that, as well as illnesses and stuff like that. And I always find that if somebody reads that in a novel, as they're reading it and they are in such a situation, that as they're reading it they're putting themselves into that character, and thus will most likely understand it more. And if you get one of those six things not to do sort of thing. So it's good that you can do that, because people can, while enjoy the story, it becomes more personal to them.
Yeah, I don't directly reveal that domestic abuse is Gwendis's motive for getting back at Simon, because the point is that all of the points of view, because it's in first person, they're unreliable. They don't tell you everything.
Right.
And neither Simon nor Gwendis tell you that the reason they hate each other is because of domestic abuse. The first instance where you find out that domestic abuse is the cause is when one of their daughters is told by the king. That is the first time where you find out what is actually going on.
Ah, interesting. Now,
so, yeah,
go
so
ahead.
the first perspective that you get on the domestic abuse is a 14-year-old girl being told by the king, and she's on the brink of tears, so it's really sad.
Yeah,
and it's one, I
and
think
then
it's one
you've got
of the best
the
things
whole family effect and how that's going to affect a 14-year-old girl and stuff like that. So that's great that you've managed to do that. The whole fact that this is your first novel, how long did it actually take you to write it all, first draft?
So I would have started in about April 2020, probably around April. First draft would have probably been done around mid 2021, and then the book was published in October 2022. So yeah, it's been a 2-year process.
Did you, when you sort of, I mean, did you get somebody else to edit it, or did, how did your editing go?
Yeah, I mean, with some of it, I just asked family and friends to give it
Right.
a read and see what they thought. And then I ended up also paying some editors on Amazon as well.
So, I mean, Noble Betrayed is out. Is there, is it a one-off, or are you going to start into a trilogy, or how are you going to get this?
Yeah, I was originally planning a trilogy, but because the books are going to be so big, I might branch off into a fourth one. So it'll be a quadrilogy.
Okay, cool. The thing that I always say to people, and I see how you found this. You might have found it different because, as I say, the majority of people who write books perhaps write them later on in life these days. And it comes. They think that they've written the book. It's there in your hand. You're fantastic. I've got it here and everything like that. And they think that's the hard work done. I've sort of done talks on this, and it's not. That's when the hard work starts to get your name out there, to get the book known about, and everything like that. Obviously, being younger, the more used to the sort of internet and everything like that. Did you find that really helped you, or did you not realize how much work there was once it came out?
Yeah, I think it's easier for a younger author than an older author to get publicity because, I mean, everyone wants to empower the future generations and everything. And I mean, I do think that an understanding of social media helped a lot, though.
Yeah, I mean, I was a, oh, I still am a huge fan of the YA bloggers. I call them the ShamWow of literature because they just soak everything up. And people said, you went to bloggers? Yeah, you get some bloggers, 2, 3, 4,000 people following them, and they write about your book. You might get 20 people think this is a great book, I'll buy the book and do a blog on it as well. And those t 20 people, you might have 3 or 4 more do some more. And that, and unlike when you go to a book signing at a bookstore where you're there, you've done it, you might have had 6 people come up to you, 2 want to know the way to the bathroom, one wants a free bookmark, etc. You're there for that time and then you're gone. It's there's no sort of follow-up to that. Yeah, all right, your books might be on the shelf and that, but once you've done a blog or done a show like this, that's on the internet. People search for you and they'll find you. Whereas people don't know when who was in this bookstore a week ago. The book's out. How's it doing, Noble Betrayed?
Yeah, it's doing pretty well. It started off with a large percentage of the sales just being family, friends, teachers,
Yeah, of course.
etc.
Yeah.
But yeah, now that I've had a lot of social media outreach, I've done podcasts and things like that. It's done pretty well. I can't think of a specific sales number right now,
Oh
but
no,
it's
but it's
definitely
done good.
it's in the hundreds. It's in the hundreds.
Have you and you've got people waiting for the second volume, I assume?
Yeah, I'm not actually working on the second novel right now. I'm doing a book that's going to be in the tragedy genre.
Okay.
So yeah, I wanted to branch out before people think that fantasy is the only thing that I do.
Yeah,
So
that's good because
yeah.
you do get people who pigeonhole themselves very early on. And you've got to find your niche. You've got to find what really, is your niche. And yes, all right, you've got the fantasy stuff, but you never know until you try this other stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
You said teachers and that had read it. You said that there's some of the names were teachers. Anybody recognise themselves?
Yeah.
Did anybody pull you out and say, excuse me, Dylan. This person here, is this meant to be me?
Yeah, that did happen, but they're all actually, they're really supportive of the fact that their names are in it. They think it's
great.
A really good.
That's great.
I just think it's a good way to honor them, because I'm only going to see these teachers for another 2 years, because
exactly.
They'll be in uni.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think that's great. As you say, a way to honor, that's the way to accept it. Never mind what position it is, it's to honour you. Yeah, you might be written out in the first chapter. Then what are you going to worry about? the mixture of characters you've got in here, you seem to have all sorts of characters, if you know what I mean. It's a right hodgepodge from, you know, with the bit about the abuse in it and everything like that. Did you find that it opened up to allow you to have more characters doing more different roles, you know, touching on different things? Don't you have even like a deaf son and, you know, deafness and stuff like that? It allowed you to sort of really, you know, dabble your fingers in all sorts of pies.
Yeah, so Darren is the deaf son's name, and he was so much fun to write because you can't rely on dialogue, obviously.
Of course not,
description. So it was a really fun challenge, and I had a lot of fun writing his chapters. He has a pet griffin, like a child griffin. So
right.
That's fun. And his story is about him uncovering the mystery behind why the kingdom is so low fantasy. So his chapters are really important to the overall story.
And he could be a lead character in another book, from the sound of it.
Yeah. Yep.
He's that sort of character, right? That's very good, very good. And the location. One of the things about fantasy is, of course, names, locations, everything you can make up as you go. How did you hit on a desert sort of location?
Yeah, so the desert is just one region of it, one point of view goes to. But the point with the setting is that it is somewhat generic.
Mm-hmm.
Its name is literally just the Great Kingdom, and I purposefully kept it that way. I was originally planning on changing it, but I've changed my mind. I'm going to keep it as the Great Kingdom. Again, there is a reason behind its name, but spoilers.
Mm-hmm. There you go. You can't give out these things. No spoilers allowed on this. I always normally say, without giving too much away, tell us the storyline sort of thing. But no, you've done good up anyway. So, but yeah, you don't want to give too many spoilers away. One thing I was thinking about, when you go for uni, I assume you take the book and say, well, I'm a published author and this is this and I've done this. Because, I mean, it's a feather in the cap of a uni, I'd have thought, having published authors there.
Yeah, I did an interview last week, and they asked me what my greatest achievement was, and I brought my book up. So I'll bring it up as many times as I can.
There you go. That's it, yeah. Free copies. I tell a story, because you'll understand this, but, you know, you go to London Airport, and you go through the customs, and you're in like a little village there, you know, with your sort of shops and stuff like that. And I was there about 5-6 years ago, and about 7 years ago, and I bought some of my YA books, was taking them home to the family, and I sort of, on the way back, we were held up at the London Airport for a while, and of course, you know, the main thing for books and stuff in England is WH Smith's. Well, I was sitting there, and I noticed they had a sort of display out the front of WH Smith's, the top 20 best-selling books. And I noticed slot 14 was empty. So I sort of sidled up and put a couple of my books in slot 14 and then sat down there. And after about half an hour, sure enough, somebody came up and they were reading it. And then they went to try and pay for it. And of course, the woman's trying to slide the barcode through. The barcode didn't work. She's trying to type it in. It didn't work. I had to leave. I was laughing too much. Stuff. But it just shows you, any advertising, you know, it doesn't matter what it is going to be good somewhere along. So there's somebody out there who ended up getting a book from WH Smith's at London Airport, and they had to pay yeah, the woman couldn't take the pay, but they managed to take it, and she made the note of the barcode. So there you go. You never know. So never.
You captured their interest.
Never stop taking your books. Never stop, you know, passing it out. You know, just offering it to people. Yeah, if you go for another interview at uni, yeah. Oh, this is my book. Do you want to take a copy of it and read it? You know, it all goes down the same way. Anyway, it's been great chatting to you, but time is going, and then you can get yourself to sleep as well. So what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find out more about you. And, of course, your book, Noble Betrayed. So over to you, Dylan.
Okay, so you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. And with all of those, my handle is lbrennan51. And the L is the Spanish article, so it's ELBrennan51. Mm-hmm. And Brennan is B-R-E-N-N-A-N. And then with Noble Betrayed, it's only available on Amazon. So just go to your local version of Amazon, go on the search bar, look up Noble Betrayed, and it will be the first result.
That's great. Well, Dylan, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Well, there you go. My guest today, Dylan Brennan, D-Y-L-A-N. And as he said, Brennan, B-R-E-N. N-N-A-N. I should have asked him whether Dylan was due to the singer or the rabbit, but that's another story. Anyway, terrific stuff. Debut book, very good debut book. It seems to cover a lot of different aspects and a great read called Noble Betrayed. So, as he said, you go to Amazon and you look up Dylan Brennan and you look up Noble Betrayed, and there it is. Great book. And, as he said, it could be a first in a foursome there coming along the way. Well, that's all for now. I'll be back tomorrow, and I've got a guest of Tim Smith tomorrow on the show. Be here at 7 p.m. Eastern. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget...